Try Therapy Notes, the number one rated electronic health record system available today. With live telephone support 7 days a week, it's clear why Therapy Notes is rated 4.9 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot and has a 5-star rating on Google. Therapy Notes makes billing, scheduling, note-taking, and telehealth incredibly easy. And now for all you prescribers out there, Therapy Notes is proudly introducing ePrescribe. Try it today with no strings attached and see why everyone is switching to Therapy Notes, now featuring ePrescribe. You can get 2 months free by using promo code CHAT at therapynotes.com. Trauma therapists, if you've been waiting for the right time to join Trauma Therapist Network membership, this is it. Between now and the end of 2024, you can save up to 50% off of your first month of membership when you submit your application at traumatherapistnetwork.com. Join us for live calls every week. Self-care, case consultation, networking, and training are included every month. We have 4 live calls, and we have 3 tiers of membership. If the live calls don't fit your schedule, you can join the Inner Circle, where you can access the library of recordings, or you can do the Listing Plus membership. All the details are at traumatherapistnetwork.com. Hope to see you in the community. Submit your application at traumatherapistnetwork.com today.
Therapy Chat Podcast, episode 475.
This is the Therapy Chat Podcast with Laura Reagan, LCSWC. The information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health professional. And now, here's your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and this week, as promised, we have part 2 of my conversation with Amber Trejo, LMFT. Amber and I are both therapists who also have complex trauma, and we are talking about our experiences of losing one of our parents within the last year and how it can really bring up some surprises from our growing up years while grieving. The trauma comes to the surface too, and often in surprising ways. When I was going through something with one of my parents a few years ago, I dealt with this, and I knew logically as a therapist that it made sense that that was happening, but at the same time, I hadn't talked to anybody who had gone through something like that, and I really wanted to know, have other people felt this way? So I'm hoping, and Amber and I were thinking our goal for having this conversation publicly instead of just privately would be for others like us who have had similar experiences to be able to recognize how it can be and to normalize that experience and hopefully give some reassurance that it's a normal part of the process and can even be an opportunity for healing something that you didn't realize was there before. This week, I'm at Psychotherapy Networker, and I have, in partnership with PESI, a special offer for therapists who want to get training at home through PESI. At PESI.com/therapychat, we have created a page of trainings done by previous Therapy Chat guests and other people who I'm hoping to interview on Therapy Chat in the future that are deeply discounted. So check that out. You can also find it on the Trauma Therapist Network website on the For Therapists section. Thank you so much for listening, and talk to you soon.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and today joining me again for a part 2 of our conversation we started before is Amber Trejo. Amber, thank you so much for coming back to Therapy Chat today.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I feel like we're like old friends now. We're just
I know
hanging out. Are we even on a podcast? I don't know.
It's just an excuse to get together.
Exactly.
For those who are hearing this part and didn't hear the other part, I'm really grateful to you for your openness to come here virtually and record with me. And the way you share about your experience for other people's benefit is just so valuable, and the way that you really make things so relatable. I just really appreciate that. And so we had our first conversation last year, and then we decided to come back together and talk about kind of how the grieving process is as a therapist. And, you know, of course, this is relatable to anyone, but I find that it's interesting when we're going through things in our lives and we are therapists, you know, we have that other hat that colors so much of the way that we see and understand the world. And it's, I think it might benefit others. I know so many people are grieving. Everyone's always losing someone, and there's so much grief happening that I hope that this will help people understand their experience maybe in a different way and normalize some of the common experiences that come up for those of us like you and I who are trauma survivors ourselves with complex trauma and going through a grieving time. So before we start talking about that again, let's just take a moment for you to tell people a little more about who you are and what you do.
Yes. Hello. I am Amber Trejo. I'm a marriage and family therapist, and I have a private practice in Indianapolis. I specialize in complex trauma and CPTSD, and I really, really love working specifically with parents who have had childhood trauma and are trying to break the cycle for their children. And I also, one more thing, speak a lot about my own trauma journey on Instagram at Integrative Trauma Therapist, and talk a lot about my own experiences of being a survivor of complex trauma and my struggles with CPTSD and parenting and attachment and all of those things.
Yeah. And I mean, you really have a gift for creating content that is, again, relatable. You know, sometimes it's funny, sometimes it's poignant, sometimes it's just informational, but it's always interesting and carries a lot of depth for something that you're finding on social media, which is really valuable.
Thank you so much.
So, you know, I want to double check something with you. Do you work with parents as couples, or do you work individually? I know a lot of marriage and family therapists do, you know, relationship therapy and don't work with individuals.
Yeah. So I do work with couples, but it's not my specialty. So I will.
Okay.
Specifically, if they are having struggles with their attachment styles and because of past trauma, but primarily I work with individuals and the entire family system or the parent-child constellation.
Beautiful. So some people who are listening might not have even known that that is a way that they could go to therapy. So, you know, once again, it's about knowledge is power. So the reason that we're talking about being survivors of complex trauma, or people with developmental trauma, or whatever you want to call it, who are grieving, is because we've both lost one of our parents in like the last year or so. You lost your mom. When was that around?
It was in November 2023. So it's been a little bit over a year.
Okay. Yeah. And I lost my dad in November of 2024.
Yeah, and I had posted something right around when you lost your dad and you reached out to me, and it was the same month, I think, or right around mm-hmm. the same time.
Yeah, I think so. I think what made me ask you. I think I was asking you, like, so how's that been for you working, being a therapist while going through losing a parent? I often, you know, hear from someone who that may have happened a few years ago, And when I was right in the thick of it, which I still am, and I hadn't known, I don't think I had realized that your mom had passed away so recently, or maybe I didn't know it at all at the time. I can't remember now, but you were so generous to share about your experience. And then we start talking about it on Therapy Chat, but we didn't get as far as we wanted to in the time we had.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I didn't post anything about my mom passing away. I am pretty private about stuff that I'm going through as I process, just because it is something that's so personal and I have to be really careful with that. And so I didn't post anything until I think it was about a year later. And then, so that was why I had just kind of posted something about it. And yeah. And then it just happened to be at the exact time that your dad had just passed.
Yeah. And you know, that's a boundary to not share about it while you're going through it. And, you know, for me, I've talked about it some, but I'll just share that. I don't know how much I said about this on our first recording, because I can't remember everything we talked about, even though it was only a couple months ago. My dad had basically, he almost died 5 years before he did. And at that time, it was a huge shock. I mean, I was reeling. It sent me into a huge anticipatory grief, childhood trauma, attachment reaction, you know, all the stuff. And from that time until the time he passed, I had been working on healing from that. So when he did pass, it wasn't like it was new. It was kind of, it was almost like a completion of something that had started 5 years earlier for me. So not to say that there haven't, well, let me just be more direct. There have been many new realizations and new awarenesses and new levels and layers of the healing journey that have unfolded since then, now that he's really gone from this world. But grief is a really interesting journey, really interesting portal.
You know, when you brought up the whole the healing that took place after he passed away, something that came up for me is that we've talked before, and I think we talked about this a little bit on the first part of this, about all of the wounds that kind of get pulled up from childhood when your parent does die, or just like the way that it ends, the stuff that is still unresolved, because it's kind of like this final closing on whatever it is, you know, for the relationship. It's complete. It's so different than when the parent is still alive. And there's so many complicated feelings that come with that. But one thing I don't think we touched on last time is that it can almost feel like new healing opens up with that after the passing of that parent. And I definitely felt like that with my mom. And I'm curious if you have noticed, now that it's been a few months since the first time we talked, and I know it was really fresh when we first talked, do you feel like there's been new healing that's kind of come up inside of you? Or does it still feel too fresh to even think about that?
Yeah, it's been, I just keep saying it's been a really transformative experience. I mean, one thing is looking at my dad differently, like sort of releasing him from the confines of the dad persona that he wore, you know, and allowing him to be more of a full, complete person with great qualities and harmful qualities. And one thing that really happened after my dad died was, and for those of us who have complex trauma, there's often little memory of childhood or certain years or a blank, or you only have a few memories of certain times. And I actually had a flood of getting emotional thinking about it, but all these positive memories with him that were like kind of locked away
with maybe some of the things that I never felt comfortable bringing up, or, you know, the hurts that I didn't think he had the capacity to really hold if I were to share them. And that was a nice surprise. Like, oh yeah, that happened. And oh yeah, that too. And, you know, just like flooding in of these positive memories. That actually kind of surprised me, because you don't know what you don't remember. Like, you don't know what it is when you don't remember it, right? But usually in trauma therapy, that is the negative experiences that we've blocked out. But when you're missing chunks of time, there were multiple things that happened during those chunks of time, not only the things that were too much for you to be able to take in at the time. That was a nice gift.
Yeah. You know, I had a similar experience, I feel like, as time went on, after being able to grieve the way my mom died and the way that it ended. And that was very complicated for me, and just, it didn't go the way that I wanted to, but I did feel like something shifted after she passed away. And even just going through her stuff, like, I remember I had given her a journal just like to write different, I think it was like a grandmother's journal or something for my kids. And some of the stuff that she had written in there, like one of the things was like, what was your favorite vacation that you ever took? And she had put like going to meet her grandson, Ezekiel, my son, for the first time. And like, it was like stuff she never told me, you know, like my mom wasn't always super nice to me, and there was always a wall up between us. And so like to see in her journal, like her writing, like getting to go meet my grandson for the first time. And she had also written, like, it was like, what was one of the biggest regrets of your life, you know? And she had written about regretting the years that she spent partying and not being present with us in our older years, like our teen years and things like that. And like, I remember reading through that and just like sobbing and just feeling so much like, thank you, Mom, for like writing this down, because this is what I wanted to hear from you, like when we were together and that moment didn't happen together, because for whatever reason, there was just this like wall up between us. And it was almost like something about her passing, like, and reading those things and some things that happened afterwards just felt like we were almost like more connected in some weird way. And I don't know if you felt like that before. And I don't know if any other complex trauma survivors feel like this, that it brings, I don't know, almost like a peace that just like can't be there when the relationship is still present and here and they're still alive.
Yeah. I think I'm relating to what you're saying. You know, what I've noticed is that there can be a way that we begin to understand our parent as we understand the impact of our childhood trauma and, you know, what they did do, what they didn't do to contribute to that. And it can, and I think our culture really contributes to this in an unhelpful way. It can be quite rigid, you know, like putting our mom in a box as a narcissist or an abuser or an addict or, you know, a bad parent, putting our dad in a box as emotionally unavailable, not protector, you know, whatever that might be. And it is so limiting because it doesn't allow for the person to be a full human. And that's, I think, what I was kind of trying to describe before, that I feel like with my dad, on the other side, I'll say, he's able to be a complete person and not just like the dad I wanted him to be, or that he wasn't, that I wished he was, you know? And it's interesting too, because even though we're talking about my dad when we're talking about my grief, I've also experienced with my mom, and they were divorced, a way that I kept her at arm's length for decades because of, maybe for both of us, it was too triggering to be closer because of the unresolved issues and pain. Maybe she wasn't ready to talk about, and I was really stuck in, until you're ready to talk about this, like, I got nothing for you, you know? And, but when, it was interesting when my dad had that scare in 2019, my system realized, like, oh, they are going to die at some point. And number one, I'm either going to need to say these things I want to say, or I need to realize that there will be a time limit to say these things, you know? Because again, you know, in the way that trauma can limit your seeing the future in a complete way, or staying in, you know, a memory of the past that you don't even understand when it's happening, that that's what's going on. As you mentioned when we were, before we were recording, an emotional flashback that can be like for years, all the time. It's where you live, that you just kind of think, at some point, I'm going to let them know, you know, or maybe I'll say it on their deathbed, as if you are believing that you think you're going to be there and get that last chance to say that last thing. And then, you know, I'm sure you've seen this countless times as I have, that people, you know, something happens, there's a sudden illness happens so quick, or something minor turns into something major, and they never come home from the hospital, or they never regain consciousness or something, or there's an accident, and you're like, oh, I thought I was going to have more time to say what I wanted to say and what, and they also may think they would have had more time to say what they wanted to say, you know? I guess that's just human, but
yeah,
I think that can be a cause of a lot of pain too.
And I feel like I was with my mom, you know, as she, right up until the very end. And it was almost like, and I don't know if this will resonate with other complex trauma survivors, or if it resonates with you, Laura, but just this feeling of like, there was this part of me that wanted to say all these things. And then there was this other part of me that was just like, it's just not safe. And I kept kind of wanting something from her and wanting to prompt that from her, but I wasn't getting that it was safe, you know, the messaging that it was safe back. And there was, because of the trauma and because of the pain, it was just like, I just can't do it. And so, you know, after my mom passed, I did have moments where I cried and I felt connected to her. And I just said, I love you so much, Mom. And I'm, you know, sorry that our relationship was the way that it was. And like, that felt really good. And it felt really healing. And so also just knowing that, like, sometimes even when we're with the person, like, our parts just don't feel safe enough when there is that much trauma, and that, like, that's okay too. And we can still say those things. We can write them down. We can say them out loud after they've passed. Like, there's just so many ways that can feel a little bit safer if we don't feel like we get that out. And I feel like my mom, sadly, like, the weird thing is like, I know my mom felt the same way towards me. For whatever reason, she was like afraid of rejection from me. And that was kind of always our dynamic. And so maybe she wanted to say things too. I mean, she wrote them down in that journal, but she never said that to me. And she had the opportunity, you know? And I think there's two ways to take that. And I think initially I took it as, you always rejected me. You never loved me the way you needed to. And then after she passed, some part of me just believed, like, for whatever reason, you couldn't, and that's okay. And I did find that I felt that healing, you know, like, and it didn't feel like all of the things she had ever done to me were gone, but it also just felt like there was just more of like a peace there than there had been before. I don't know.
Yeah, I do think that that's an experience that other people will be able to relate to, and I can relate to. And it's kind of like where I was saying, instead of, you know, our younger parts that, you know, they always have very black and white ways of looking at things because they're kids, you know, that's how kids think. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's like allowing for the space for her not to have had to be perfect and have to get it all right, just to let her be a human with her own flaws too, you know, because that mother title is such a, it's like a setup, you know. No one can live up to the ideal, and our society doesn't provide the support for women to ever be able to show up for their children the way that, you know, would be ideal for the children, because women don't get enough support. So generationally, this setup has been in place. Be perfect. You cannot possibly ever be that way because the structure won't support it. You know, we don't have community surrounding us, taking care of us to recover from birth and to teach us how to take care of the baby and, you know, give us the nurturing we need so that we have an abundance of nurturing that we can give to the baby. And I know that some moms do worse than others, you know, like that's true. And that's why people are traumatized generation after generation. But in reality, we're all humans. And as a woman, you know, my mother title for me is very important. It probably has an outsized importance because of the way I was or wasn't mothered as a child, because I understand just how important, you know, the way we're mothered or parented is to our well-being as adults, but and as children. But I'm also more than just mother. I'm a person with my own interests. I'm a, you know, I'm all these other things. So was your mom. So is my mom, you know?
Yeah. And honestly, I think that I didn't even like connect this at all, but I do feel like my mom's death had so much to do with the way that some of my content really changed, and my own journey with parenting was a big impact on that. But like, I really, when I think about working with moms with CPTSD and like who have all this trauma and want to show up differently, like so much of that I feel like was because of my mom, because I know for certain, like now that I know about CPTSD, like she had CPTSD for sure. And she just was pulling at anything she could to like soothe herself, you know? And so I just think about that. And I do feel like she is proud of me, and that's so important, you know, but I don't feel like I could, it's so weird because I just don't feel like I could have also got to that place if she was still alive right next to me. I mean, like love her, but she's just not like, that wasn't our dynamic, you know? So it's an interesting, I don't know, just such an interesting journey.
Yeah. I mean, I will say when I realized how many unmet needs I had from the way I was parented, my mom was the one that I first was the most mad at. And again, our society gives us 1,000 ways to blame our mom for not being what we needed her to be. And, you know, the expectations for dads are like rock bottom, you know? But when I started working with parents, I realized we can't vilify the parent we can't vilify this parent's parent when they are also going to make mistakes because they are traumatized too, just like their parent was. So, you know, I mean, you've probably seen this a lot. It's like that classic, like, I don't want to be a bad parent like my parents were. And then this super perfectionistic thing comes in, and it's like, if I don't do everything perfectly, I'm a horrible parent, you know? And that can be such a crushing experience for those who have experienced childhood trauma. So, you know, maybe for your mom, not that I'm trying to be your therapist or anything, but, you know, maybe it was like important to never acknowledge that to save her ego, you know, because the alternative is so crushing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that makes
sense. So like showing vulnerability was not safe to her.
Yeah. And that's the way it always was with her. Like, she never felt safe to be vulnerable, you know? And so I think the death of a parent, I think it really also kind of brings to light their life and their pain. And yeah, their humanness, just like you were saying.
Yeah. The unresolved stuff, though, that's a big one. And the grief of not having the chance to express those things. It's a beautiful gift that your mom, well, first you gave the beautiful gift of the journal, and then your mom actually used it and maybe even like secretly was hoping you would see it and understand what she couldn't say.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah, I didn't even think about that before, but you're probably right.
It's funny that you brought up a journal too, because I was thinking of asking you before you brought that up at all. When you said, when I was going through my mother's things, I thought, I wonder if she found any journals and did she read them? Because that is like scary. I'm afraid if I saw my mom's journal, I'm afraid what I would read. Like, I'm afraid that I would be like, oh no, she really did hate me.
Oh my gosh. Well, that's
consistent to the last day. Laura's horrible. What a disappointment as a child.
Oh my gosh. Well, that's the funniest thing that you mentioned that, because yeah, we found another journal of hers too, from when my brother and I, my brother's 3 years younger than me, when he was like in his late teens and I was in my like late teens, early 20s. So he must have been like 17 or something like that. And we were just in the party scene like hard, and like we were just paying her back for all of the trauma that she ever put us through. And like every journal entry was like, well, he quit another job today, or he got fired from another job today. I don't know when he's ever going to learn and stuff like that. And then it was like, Amber and like, you know, my best friend at the time, like, aren't talking anymore. They got into a fight. I don't know what's going on. And so like, just hearing how much she was thinking about us and like all of the drama and things that, you know, we were kind of like paying her back for, you know, in those early years. And I was just thinking about that. I was like, man, that's kind of funny that she was journaling all about that. And just like, I don't know what I'm going to do about them. I don't know what, you know, and just knowing where we are now too, you know, it's like, oh, we got through that and we all were okay. And yeah.
That's reassuring too.
Yeah, it kind of is. It kind of like brings this whole like big picture out, because I think there's so much when we're in the thick of that trauma that we're just like, and like you said, you don't see a future, right?
Yeah.
And you don't imagine a time of like, oh wait, what if we all get through this? And what if we're all okay? And what if we still have a relationship, even though it's bumpy? And even though we, you know, get hurt by each other sometimes, like, what if we make it through this? What if we're okay? And so I think that that put reading those journal entries also put that a lot into perspective in my mind. Like, oh man, I bet she was like, my kids are screwed and like, they're never going to be okay. You know, what did I do? I screwed up and they're totally messed up now. And you know,
Today's episode is sponsored by Psychotherapy Networker and PESI. If you're a therapist, be sure to check out the partner page, which is linked in the show notes, where you can get discounted trainings with previous Therapy Chat guests like Courtney Armstrong, Dr. Leslie Korn, Dr. Ariel Schwartz, Dr. Tammy Nelson, Dr. Janina Fisher, Rebecca Case, Dr. Peter Levine, Dr. Lindsay Gibson, Deb Dana, Lori Gottlieb, and many many others. You'll find the link in the show notes to my partner page with PESI and Psychotherapy Networker, where you can find all these discounted training. If you need CEs, this is a great place to go. Therapists, we've all had that moment. You wake up in the middle of the night. Oh my gosh, did I do my notes? Well, you don't have to worry about that anymore when you use Therapy Notes. Therapy Notes makes it easy to write your notes, get them done quickly, but thoroughly. My group practice has used Therapy Notes for 6 years, and everyone always finds it easy to use. But the best thing is, if you do need help, you can call their customer service number and a person answers the phone. And anytime I've ever had to use it, which is maybe 3 times in the past 6 years, my issue has been resolved easily with a cheerful demeanor in 15 minutes or less. So I highly recommend Therapy Notes. And don't forget, go to therapynotes.com and use promo code chat to get 2 free months. Well, I know your kids are younger than mine. Like, how old is your oldest?
He's about to be 11.
Yeah. Okay. So mine are, my oldest is like close to 30.
Oh,
and then
okay.
My youngest is in her mid 20s. So it's another change that's happened. I love what you just shared. I mean, because it reminds me something that has really changed for me. Going back to that, not seeing the future, you know, like, I think this is one of those, I was looking at my Janina Fisher flip chart. This is one of those trauma symptoms that people don't often talk about or know about, but they call it a foreshortened sense of the future. And it's like, I'm saying this for the listeners, like, it's, you don't, when you, someone asks you, where will you be in 5 years? Or what do you see yourself doing when you grow up? And the child is like, grow up? Like, I don't know. It's like, they can't envision that. And, you know, that's an example of how trauma kind of keeps us thinking of the analogy, like a bug in a fossil trapped in amber, you know, you're just trapped in this like trauma time and not seeing all of time. And something that changed for me after my dad passed is it's related to what you were saying about that second journal you were telling about, you know, that idea of, I just want to be a better parent than my parents were. And then I used to be like, well, that should be easy. And you know, and that was my anger. But if this happens to my child, this thing that happened to me, or if that happens to my child, some other thing that I went through, then I see myself as I failed as a parent. So again, it's still very black and white, you know, like not being able to see that people go through things, even though you know this as a therapist, but when it's in your own life, you might look at it unconsciously, you just look at it differently. So something that's really changed for me is this feeling of like bad things can happen and you can come out the other end, and like thinking about it and seeing it as not just like, oh, I hope a bad thing never happens. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like that fear of loss is part of that, you know, because the loss is such a huge unnamed experience of being a childhood trauma survivor. There's so much loss of what you didn't get, what didn't happen, what you were wishing for, you know, these like, it's very intangible.
Yeah. You know, when you say that, something that I'm thinking about is actually something that happened to me this morning and something that I found myself doing a lot when my mom passed away. And I don't know if this resonates with you at all, but I'm sure it will resonate with other complex trauma survivors. This feel, well, I know for sure it'll probably resonate with you as well, but just let me know. So this feeling of like when the sadness happens, it's like you're like, you feel that pit in your stomach and it's just kind of like following you around. And it's kind of telling you this story, like the world is ending and it's never going to be better. And like, you can't feel this sadness. Like you've got to push it down. You've got to go get distracted. Like I actually, and I told you this a little bit before, and I'm not going to go into it right now on the podcast, but like I've been having a hard month. And this morning I felt the sadness come on. And I felt the pit in my stomach. And, you know, this is the work that I do with clients when I'm like, you're in an emotional flashback or you're having an emotion. You can let the emotion pass. You don't have to believe everything it says. But when it happens to me, it's just like the whole world is ending. And like this sadness that I feel, like this sadness is all consuming and it's going to take me over and it's going to drown me. And if I let myself feel it, like it's just going to be the worst thing in the world. And something that I feel like I really had to follow was my own advice was like, sadness is there. That's okay. Like, and I even said this to myself this morning, like, I was like, it's okay that you're feeling sad. Like, and you don't have to believe the story that that sadness is telling you? What if that sadness was going to come and you felt it? I'm like, everything would be okay. It would pass. It would be okay. Like, I think as a childhood trauma survivor, we're so afraid of the sadness because, like, if we let that sadness come, it would really feel like the end of the world. And so a habit is kind of just pushing it down. And so I felt that when my mom died, like, try to distract myself, try to pull to the things that I usually do to, like, not feel, you know, and just kind of allowing myself to be like, oh, it's okay. The sadness is here. And I don't have to believe that the whole world is ending and that my life is over and that I'm completely helpless, completely powerless. I could just be like, I'm sad.
Yeah, it's like that fear that the sadness will be so big that it will swallow us. That's what I say. It'll like swallow me, or kind of like it won't be okay and it'll never be okay.
Exactly. Yes.
You know,
that is the story my sadness always tells me. Like, and that what you said, the shortening of the, what is it, foreshortened
sense of the future is the technical term.
So true. Yeah. It's like, yeah, you feel like it's just going to be like that for forever.
Right.
And of course that,
and we actually know that emotions have an arc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I still do that. I mean, I'm almost 40 years old. I feel like my husband, like, he doesn't love it when I'm sad, but he's always trying to like get me to show sadness, and he welcomes it and he comforts me, and all my people that I love comfort me. And I still find myself doing that with the sadness, or the sadness telling me that story. And so it is so important to just remember, like, yeah, it's going to come and it might feel really scary, and it's going to be okay. And you will get through it.
Yeah. And, you know, since you're talking about this, and I'm so grateful for you sharing it, what I've observed in myself and with clients is that we expend so much energy trying not to feel the thing that is trying to be felt. And when we actually can tolerate allowing ourselves to feel it, it does kind of go pretty quickly. It's like 90 seconds max.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, years of trying to avoid feeling it can be the case, you know, and it's not to say that the feelings are really not that bad. It's more that we now have the capacity to tolerate it. We didn't then, but we do now, you know, and so it's like updating the younger parts. It's okay. Like, we can hold this now. We aren't alone now. We do have people who care.
Yeah. And knowing what we need to soothe ourselves, which I think that's another complicated part of the grief thing with complex trauma survivors, is that it's so hard to know sometimes what we need. Sometimes we feel like we don't need other people. We don't want to be around other people. We might feel repulsive when we're feeling sad. We might feel like nobody can see us like this. And so I think it can also just,
like, this is the time when I'm completely unlovable and no one would want to see this.
Yeah. And I don't know if you ever feel like this, but I feel like that still comes up inside of me sometimes. Like, this part of you is not safe, and it's not okay, and it's not lovable.
Yeah.
And so being able to know what does soothe us, or like when we're going to the things, like I was in Target and I was just like trying to find five different, you know, try on a bunch of different clothes before work. I was like, what am I doing? And I'm like, nothing's fitting right. Like, you know, and I just like noticed the pit in my stomach. I'm like, why do you keep doing this? Like, are you really so mad about the clothes, or are you just like having a hard time right now and you're just feeling overwhelmed and sad and like everything is going to shit and you just want to like just be like, ugh. It's over, you know?
Well, you know, I feel like what you're describing there sounds to me like the way it feels to be in freeze. It's like, I just need to get out of this. I can't, this is an intolerable. I just want to like take off this body, you know,
that's
just like
so
get escape from here. It feels too awful.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's exactly what it was. And just like that feeling of like wanting to run. But you can't run. Yeah. So you're just trying to like, it's just go, like
frantically kind of grabbing for what could be making you, allowing you to escape from that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And going back to that, like what soothes me. And so like it ended up really being helpful for me to just say, like, to myself, like, you're feeling really sad today. That's okay. You tell your clients all the time, it's okay to feel sad. Like, it's okay. It's okay to feel sad. It's not going to be like this forever. And even though some of those sayings might feel really cliche, you know, it can be helpful just to remind yourself of that it's okay to be sad.
Yeah. You know, something Peter Levine said at a conference I was at one time really stuck with me. He said, you know, sometimes all someone needs is for someone to just basically put their hand on their arm and go, yeah, it's going to be okay. And so at that conference, something, I had a nightmare like that night after being with attending that. And I had a nightmare that was something from my trauma history. And I like soothed myself at the time, but when I woke up in the morning, I still felt really unsettled. And then I remembered him saying that, and I tried putting my hand on my own arm and saying, it's okay, you're not alone with this. And I like really burst into tears, and it moved through. And I was like, wow, the touch can really, you know, so sometimes it's like, you know, we're trying to reach those parts and soothe them and reassure them. But sometimes for me, the only way to, and I don't think it's just me, but, you know, for some of our parts that are more really early, you know, really young, it's just like there needs to be some kind of touch, and it activates the attachment system to be like, oh, okay, I'm not alone here, even though I actually am by myself putting my hand on my own arm, but it's still giving that message to the system.
Oh, that's so true. I know. I always like, well, my hand right here.
Yeah, me too. And it's funny because with the grief, like I gave myself at first, I totally gave myself a pass. Of course you're sad. You're grieving. Oh, this is grief. This is grief. Now it's been a whopping 4 months and I'm like, you're still feeling like this? But
yeah, that's so true. That's so true. I feel myself doing
the like
same thing.
I gave myself a time limit unconsciously for how long I was allowed to access my emotions about it.
That's another piece about it, you know? That's so, so true. I feel like mine was like 2 days. Like you had like 2 good tries in the shower. Now get it together. Like go, like be okay, you know? Don't be sad about it anymore. But I feel like that's why I really have to do like rituals when it comes to allowing myself to feel that. Do you do anything like that? Because I feel like I would listen to certain songs after she passed, and still even now, like I'll listen to certain songs and I'll just allow myself, you know, in the way home from the car, like in the drive home from work, just listening and allowing myself. When I feel it inside of me, like I can always feel it, like kind of like I did this morning, like you really need to like release some emotion, and allowing myself to do that and then just kind of like moving on afterwards feels really good.
Yeah, I do. I have different things. Sometimes I write to my dad, or I write about how I'm feeling, like in a journal. Sometimes I make art. Sometimes I listen to music. Sometimes I light a candle. It all depends. Sometimes I try to talk to him in my mind. And, you know, interestingly, it was like for a while, I felt like he was right there. And then there started to be a time where I felt like I can't feel him. And like noticing that is also, that brings like a grief reaction, like, you know, and I'm wondering, is that a memory of really like, where are you? I need you, you know, like from when I was young, or, you know, and is that a part, is something blocking me from feeling the connection? So I try to be really curious about it, but it definitely the rituals are an important aspect of moving through this healing after, because, you know, you're a different person when your parents aren't living anymore. Like you're now not in that, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh my!
I still have one, but it's a big. It's like, you know, and I've heard other people say, like, "Who am I if I don't have my mom or my dad?" And but I want to name, as we come to a close, one more concept that I just think is really important, and I hope you might be able to speak about this. Oftentimes, I'll see clients thinking that they shouldn't be feeling how they're feeling because they weren't that close with their parent, or they, you know, the parent was abusive to them in some way. So they're like, oh, well, you know, this shouldn't be bothering me, but why do I feel so, why am I having like my eating disorder symptoms flare up? Or, you know, why am I suddenly unable to sleep? Or why do I have pain all over my body? We weren't that close. You know what I mean?
You know, I know we're like right at the end, but I felt that way about my dad. My dad and I, you know, he left when I was young, and we didn't talk for years. And I was pregnant with my first son, and I had just gotten married and stuff. And I wanted to find him and talk to him and have some closure and things. And I ended up learning that he had passed away, and he was not a good person at all, you know, and there was a lot that happened with him before he did leave. And so I just kind of was like, oh, he's dead. And it was like this weird, I don't know how to explain it. It wasn't like, I wouldn't even say grief came up inside of me right away. It was just like, he's dead. And I didn't even allow myself to like to be in touch with what emotions were coming up inside of me. It was just kind of like numb. And then I think it was like a year or two later, I had reached out to an aunt who I no longer spoke with, but I was just like curious because I didn't know how he had died. I didn't know like what had happened. And there was just so much of that part of my, you know, family history and everything I knew nothing about. It's just crazy, you know? And my aunt just like really coldly, like I had found her on Facebook, really coldly said something along the lines of like, oh, he died from liver cancer and he died completely alone or something like that, right? And that's like all she said. I was just like, okay, thank you, you know. It was just like,
thanks,
really, like that's so ugh. And so then after, I just found I was like so irritable, and I was so, because that's kind of where it all go. If I don't allow myself to feel whatever sadness or grief I'm feeling, I'll go straight into anger and irritability. And I kind of was just like on edge and was being really mean to my husband. Poor guy. That's like the one that I'm just like really irritable with him. And he was like, what's going on for you? And then all of a sudden I just like broke down and kind of just like allowed myself to feel, like, I was like, I guess I just feel really, really sad. Like, even though he wasn't a good person, you know, even though he did all these bad things, even though he left and I hadn't even talked to him for years, like some part of me just feels very sad and very sad, like that this was his story. And this was like the way his story ended. There was like no redemption to his story. There was no like, well, he ended up getting help and like he was okay. Like his story was just all around sadness, you know? And I can't help but wonder, one, if that experience happens a lot for people who, you know, like you said, find out their parents have passed and they don't have any kind of relationship with them, or the parent was really abusive. But two, like if they feel, when we come from so much trauma, I feel like that probably is a common feeling of just like, my parents' story just was so sad. It started sad. It was sad all along and it ended sad. And it was just like, where is the hope? Where is the, I don't know, like the redemption in the story. And it's just like, that's it. It's just sadness. And so I don't know, that was kind of like a tangent, but I feel like, you know, it is a really common experience to not allow or feel valid in the feelings that you're feeling because a parent was abusive, or because a parent wasn't there or wasn't around, and to even feel like you can't allow yourself to feel those feelings because of whatever that parent did. And then also just the feeling of that, yeah, that the story's just ending and it's just heartbreaking.
Doesn't feel complete.
It just feels, and that's just the ending for so many people's lives, for so many people's stories. It's really sad and really heartbreaking. And I think that that needs to be acknowledged too, that it's okay to grieve over whatever your parent, like you couldn't save your parent. You couldn't help your parent. Maybe your parents' story was ended really horribly. And maybe part of you is happy about that, but then another part of you feels really sad about that. There's just, it's so complicated.
Yes. Yes. And these are ambiguous grief, complicated grief, traumatic grief experiences. It's hard to make sense out of these things. And I hope by us talking about it, that it helps other people have a name for what they're feeling or some context, and potentially for therapists who are listening too, to maybe look at things slightly differently from how they were. Because, you know, going through these experiences yourself does change things. I mean, that's one of the best growth experiences as a therapist, is to, you know, continually learn from our experiences and take that back to our work.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the last part is about the grief, is that I think it's a beautiful way for us to show up for ourselves, regardless of what we're feeling. Just how can we allow ourselves to safely feel that and be there for ourselves in the process? Maybe in the way our parents couldn't have done.
Right. And I just am going to add a point to that, connecting the way we are about this. That's one way to do it differently, right? Like not isolating, not holding back from what we're going through as if it's something shameful.
Yeah. Yes. That's so true. That brings so much healing. And so much connection, yeah. And knowing you're not alone. You're not alone in these complicated experiences and feelings and emotions.
That's right. And, you know, as we end for real, what your parents, you know, couldn't realize in themselves, you know, the full expression of who they are. There is you and your siblings and your children. And that is, you know, maybe that's the redemption.
Yeah.
And I'll take that for myself too.
I love that. That was so beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate your vulnerability, your authenticity, and the way that you take your experience and use it to help other people. And, you know, I find it very inspiring. I'm really grateful, Amber.
Thank you so much. Thanks for talking with me and having me on and having these amazing conversations.
Try Therapy Notes, the number one rated electronic health record system available today. With live telephone support 7 days a week, it's clear why Therapy Notes is rated 4.9 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot and has a 5-star rating on Google. Therapy Notes makes billing, scheduling, note-taking, and telehealth incredibly easy. And now for all you prescribers out there, Therapy Notes is proudly introducing ePrescribe. Try it today with no strings attached and see why everyone is switching to Therapy Notes, now featuring ePrescribe. You can get 2 months free by using promo code CHAT at therapynotes.com.
Trauma therapists, if you've been waiting for the right time to join Trauma Therapist Network membership, this is it. Between now and the end of 2024, you can save up to 50% off of your first month of membership when you submit your application at traumatherapistnetwork.com. Join us for live calls every week. Self-care, case consultation, networking, and training are included every month. We have 4 live calls, and we have 3 tiers of membership. If the live calls don't fit your schedule, you can join the Inner Circle, where you can access the library of recordings, or you can do the Listing Plus membership. All the details are at traumatherapistnetwork.com. Hope to see you in the community. Submit your application at traumatherapistnetwork.com today.
Thank you for listening to Therapy Chat with your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC. For more information, please visit therapychatpodcast.com.